July 9th, 2014, Bhaktivedanta Manor, London, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 2, The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu, Texts 1 through 3. We'll read the summary. This second chapter describes the dynasties of the sons of Manu, headed by Karusha. After Sujumna accepted the order of Vanaprastha, you remember about Sujumna? Rather interesting person, yes? Our doubly transgender person. So after Sujumna accepted the order of Vanaprastha and departed for the forest, Vaivasata Manu, being desirous of sons, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and consequently begot 10 sons like Maharaj Ishvaku, all of whom were like their father. One of these sons, Prasadra, who we're going to be reading about today, was engaged in the duty of protecting cows at night with a sword in his hand. Following the order of his spiritual master, he would stand in this way for the entire night. Once in the darkness of night, a tiger seized a cow from the cowshed, and when Prasadra came to know this, he took a sword in his hand and followed the tiger. Unfortunately, when he finally approached the tiger, he could not distinguish between the cow and the tiger in the dark, and thus he killed the cow. Because of this, his spiritual master cursed him to take birth in a Shudra family. But Prasadra practiced mystic yoga, and in bhakti yoga, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he voluntarily entered a blazing forest fire, thus relinquishing his material body and going back home, back to Godhead. So even your guru's curse is not going to keep you from going back to home, back to Godhead. Isn't that interesting? He was cursed by his spiritual master. It didn't matter. The curse had no effect. He took shelter of Krishna and didn't take another birth at all. Kavi, the youngest son of Manu, was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from his very childhood. From Manu's son known as Karusha, a sect of Kshatriyas known as the Karushas was generated. Manu also had a son known as Drishta, from whom another sect of Kshatriyas was generated, but although they were born of one who had the qualities of Kshatriya, they became Brahmanas. Jai, Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gornitai. From Riga, another son of Manu, came the sons and grandsons known as Sumati, Bhuchajyoti, and Vasu. From Vasu in succession came Pratika, and from him came Ogavan. Descending in order from the seminal dynasty of Narishyanta, another son of Manu, Vichitrasena, Riksha, Midavan, Purna, Indrasena, Vittihotra, Satashrava, Urushrava, Devadatta, and Agnivesha. From the Kshatriyas known as Agnivesha came the celebrated Brahmana dynasty, called the Agnivesha-yana. From the seminal dynasty of Dista, another son of Manu, came Nabaga. And from him in succession came Balananda, Vatsapriti, Pramshu, Pramati, Kanitra, Chakshusha, Vimissati. You know, we may think these names are really boring, but these were all real people, right, who had interesting lives. And I mean, if you're one of the most elevated people in the universe, you get to have your name in this list of names that people sit in a Bhagavatam class feeling bored about. That's if you're one of the most important people in the whole universe. And we think our lives are so important, right? We think everything we're doing is so important and so significant, and we're just so, so, so important. Right? But no one's even going to remember our name in 70 years. Right? So here these people, all we have, these are the most important people. And we have, as Prabhupada said, a list of names that the speaker is struggling to pronounce properly. Vivimshati Ramba Kani Natra Karandama Avikshit Maruta Dama Rajavardhana Suriti Nara Kevala Dunduman Vegvan Buddha and Trinabindu. In this way, many sons and grandsons were born in this dynasty. From Trinabindu came a daughter named Ilavila, from whom Kuvera took birth. Trinabindu also had 3 sons named Vishala, Sunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. The son of Vishala was Hemachandra, his son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama. The sons of Samyama were Devaja and Krishashva. Krishashva's son Somadatta performed an Ashwamedha sacrifice, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, he achieved the supreme perfection of going back home, back to Godhead. So we have text 3 on the board. Sukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, when his son Sujumna had thus gone to the forest to accept the order of Vanaprastha, Vaivasata Manu, Shraddadeva, being desirous of getting more sons, performed severe austerities on the bank of the Jamuna for 100 years. So people took this business of having good children very seriously. Right? They performed austerities. They fixed their mind. It wasn't just some casual thing or some accidental thing. So severe austerities in order to have good children. This is the sacrifice of the Grihastha Ashram. So Grihastha Ashram has two main sacrifices, to produce good population and to produce honest wealth. This is the duty of those in the Grihastha Ashram, how they use that ashram in Krishna's service. Text 2. Then, because of this desire for sons, the Manu known as Shraddhadeva worshipped the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, the Lord of the demigods. Thus he got 10 sons exactly like himself. Among them all, Ikshvaku was the eldest. So he didn't just do austerities, but he worshipped Krishna. Now we can say that he's worshipping for material desire to get children. But at the same time, this was his service. It was his service to have good children to rule the universe. And these leaders of the universe have this responsibility. This is why we see over and over and over again in the Bhagavatam that these kshatriyas are looking for good children. It's something like if you're running the temple and you want to retire, you have to make sure somebody responsible takes up your post. You don't just walk away. You don't just say, okay, I'm quitting now, time for me to retire. But you make sure you have a good successor who you train up. So this is their motive, to keep everything going for the service of the Lord, to make sure that the universe is run properly for the service of the Lord, make sure everyone is engaged in the process of yajna. That's why it's not that they're so interested in getting children so their name and fame continues, or that they enjoy family life, or, you know, that's not their, at least it's not their primary motive. But among these great souls, their idea is that if you have the proper child, then you train them from birth, you attract the proper person, and you give them training from the beginning. I mean, we see how much more difficult it is to train people in Krishna consciousness when they start as adults. And Prabhupada says, children are like soft dough. You can mold them in any way. But, you know, but once you take your soft dough and you cook it or you bake it, then the only way to change it is to break it. It's a little traumatic. But if you train somebody properly from childhood, it's very easy. And then if you're going to be training somebody from childhood, putting in all that effort, then you want to have good children. You want to start with people, just like in a company, if they hire somebody, even if they're going to provide training, they want to hire someone who's going to be receptive to that training, who already has good qualities. They don't just hire somebody randomly off the street. So these people, they knew the process by which to attract good children who they would train. And ultimately, they go to Krishna. So whatever we want in this world, even if we want something, I was just hearing Prabhupada say this morning, even if we want something for our own sense gratification, we should go to Krishna. Because going to Krishna will purify us. What to speak of if we want something for Krishna's service. So here Manu is approaching Krishna and asking him, please help me to attain these good children for your service. So text 3. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Among these sons, Prasadra, following the order of his spiritual master, was engaged as a protector of cows. He would stand all night with a sword to give the cows protection. Purport. One who becomes Virasana takes the vow to stand all night with a sword to give protection to the cows. Because Prasadra was engaged in this way, it is to be understood that he had no dynasty. So the acharyas commenting on this explain, Prasadra is described first because he had no children. So this particular story about Prasadra is explaining why he had no children. He was guarding the cows. He killed the cow by accident. As we read in the summary, his guru cursed him. Then he just took up austerities and went back to Godhead. So he never had a dynasty. Going on with the purport. We can further understand from this vow accepted by Prasadra how essential it is to protect the cows. Some son of a kshatriya would take this vow to protect the cows from ferocious animals, even at night. What then is to be said of sending cows to slaughterhouses? This is the most sinful activity in human society. Prasadrastu mano putro gopalo guruna krita palayam ashaya vato ratram virasana vrataha. Among these sons, Prasadra, following the order of his spiritual master, was engaged as a protector of cows. He would stand all night with a sword to give the cows protection. So the son of a kshatriya is a prince. What is a prince going to do? You think about what a prince does. Could you imagine, you know, Prince Charles standing here at the Goshal all night with weapons in case any foxes, you have foxes here, in case any, we don't have any tigers, but, you know, in case any foxes were to come. Inconceivable, right? That the royalty of the United Kingdom would send their princes to guard the cows and stay up all night. Not only guarding the cows with a sword, but not sleeping, staying all, taking a vow, ratram all night, virasana vrataha, taking a vow, I'm going to stand in the virasana, the posture of a vira, of a hero, to guard some animals. Inconceivable in modern society where the leaders don't even stay up all night to guard the citizens, the human citizens, what to speak of the animal citizens, right? They don't even guard the human citizens. They just put up a sign, warning, pickpockets operate in this area, guard your valuables carefully. You've signed the police. You know, well, excuse me, if you know there's pickpockets in the area, why aren't you protecting us? We're just putting up a sign that we have to protect ourselves. So the leaders of society, yad yad acharya shrestas, they set the standard for what's most important. It's one of our big questions in life. What's most important? And the famous so-called guru, Stephen Covey, who gives a little diagram for what's most important in life. And he puts things in four quadrants according to urgent and important. So he has the urgent and important, urgent and not important, important but not urgent, and not important and not urgent. And he says we have to figure this out in our life. What's urgent and important, and then what's important but not urgent. He makes the astute observation that most of us do what's important and urgent, and then we go to what's urgent and not important, and we never get to the important and not urgent. But how do you know? How do you know what's important and urgent? How do you figure this out? That's our question every day, isn't it? I was just talking to a devotee yesterday who said, yeah, you know, I just haven't been able to chant my 16 rounds for so many weeks. Oh, why? I've been doing this and this and this. And I'm thinking, you don't know what's important. You know, he's putting something that's urgent and not important over something that's urgent and important. How does one decide one's priorities? And we all have a list of all these things that we want to do with our life, yes? Most of us. Some people have kind of a blank list. I don't know what I want to do with my life. But most of us have a list of all these things that we'd like to do. But what's the most important and the most urgent? So how are we going to figure this out? And we could look in the Shastra. But the problem is that in the Shastra, there's so many different instructions for so many different people. How are you going to figure that out? And there are statements in the Shastra that appear to be contradictory. Just like Krishna tells Arjuna that for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So you might say, oh, the most important thing is honor. And then a little later he says, just fight without considering honor or dishonor. Oh, I guess it wasn't so important. You know, how are you going to discern this? So therefore, Mahajana Yena Pitha Swakanta, that one follows the path of the Mahajanas, one follows the path of the authorities, like these great kings, like these sons of Manu. And they're telling us what's really important. And we may be surprised here that something that's really, really, really important is taking care of cows. Now, how do they demonstrate that it's important? Again, they don't just talk it. They don't just say, cow protection is very important. But they demonstrate that by sending one of their princes, one of the king's sons, one of the sons of Manu, not just king, one of the sons of Manu. I mean, we think that this was a very low-grade job, right? The nighttime security guard. What do you do for a living? I'm a nighttime security guard. That's not a very prestigious job, is it? I mean, I know some devotees who have that kind of job and really like it because they can, you know, chant and read all night. It's easy for them to do a full-on ekadasi. They're staying up every night. So they really love their job. But it's not a high prestige job. I mean, the aristocratic people, you imagine again, you know, some aristocratic person. My son, when you grow up, I want you to be a nighttime security guard. Imagine the Indian family saying that to their children, you know. Okay, son, that's what I have in mind for you. Be a nighttime security guard. It wouldn't happen. But here we see Manu's son. So that speaks, right? Actions speak louder than words. Examples higher than precept. what's so important that the prince personally, not some lower echelon police officer, personally, standing with a sword. Why? On the order of his guru, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow's kind of heavy. Get to talk about why one shouldn't be a professional guru. What does it mean to be a brahmana? But anyway, so on the order of his guru. And he didn't say to his guru, Vasistha, me? Vrsadra? I'm the prince. Why should I be guarding cows, animals, at night? That's not my job. My job is to ride on the battlefield for glory. And you're just having me guard the cowshed. You see this word, Gopala. It was so nice to read that. Wasn't it nice when you read that word? Didn't you all feel happy reading that word, Gopala? Oh, that's Krishna's name. So, Gopala. He didn't say to his guru, I'm going to become a Gopala. I'm going to become a cowherd. You're going to make me a cowherd? I'm the prince. You know, imagine again, if you go to the aristocracy and say, you know, let your son become a shepherd, a cowherder. When the Pandavas were in their year in exile, Nakul and Sahadev, one of them fit. Which one? Anybody remember which one was the cowherd and which was the horse? I think Nakul took care of the horses, huh? Was that right? Anybody remember who was who? No. Anyway, one of them took care of the cows, one of them took care of the horses. I become a Gopal. You know, one of my favorite stories is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar is in Vaikuntha. And when he goes to Vaikuntha, he runs up to Lord Vishnu, Gopal, Gopal! And the residents of Vaikuntha stop him, and they say, excuse me, this is the King of Kings, like Handel's Messiah, Lord of Lords, King of Kings. He's the King of Kings. What are you doing calling him, oh, cowherd? Not very respectful. You can't talk like this to Lord Narayana, the King of Kings, of King of Kings, of Kings of Kings of Kings of Vaikuntha. They said, yes, yeah, he has an incarnation as Krishna. And as Krishna, he's a cowherd. He takes that role temporarily to kill Kamsa and some demons, but you know, you don't talk like that here. And then they had a debate, which is probably why I really like this Leela. I was trained in debate. So they have a debate. And one group is saying it's okay to call Lord Narayan Gopal, and one group is saying it's not okay. They have differences of opinion in Vaikuntha. That's what it means to be individuals. Tre Rishi wrote to Prabhupada and said, there's difference of opinions. This is due to impersonalism. Prabhupada says, no, it's due to personalism. He said, being a different person means you have different opinions as long as we agree on the Siddhanta. Anyway, interestingly enough, they're having this debate. Is it okay or not? And the okay people won the debate so that it became okay to call the Lord Gopala. But even the ones who said it was okay, they considered that Krishna was an incarnation of Narayana. That was how they saw things. They said, oh, it's one of the Lord's incarnations. That's true. They said, but it's okay to call the Lord by any of his incarnations because they're all different names of him, so it's all right. But the point is that some of the residents of Vaikuntha considered that calling Lord Narayana a cowherd was disrespectful, a lower occupation, even though that was one of his incarnations. So here when the guru tells the son of Manu, guard the cows, and not only guard the cows, do it personally, not just, this is your responsibility to make sure the cows are guarded. Hire some people to do it. You personally do it, and not only that, you do it at night. So he didn't argue with his guru. He didn't say, this is a rather demeaning position for the son of Manu. Can't you ask some Shudra to do this? Or at least a low-level security guard? No. He took a vow of Vrata. Yes, I will follow the orders of my guru. And in this way, Vasistha and Manu and Prasadra are showing that protection of the cows is not a lowly activity. When that astrologer came to see the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, another one of my favorite stories, in Chaitanya Mangala, so this astrologer comes to see Lord Chaitanya, and he says, would you like to know what you were in your last life? So I think most of us would answer yes to that question. If some learned astrologer could come, would you like to know what you were in your last life? Sure. So Lord Chaitanya said, of course, you can tell me what I was in my last life. So this astrologer, he has his Gopal deity. Here we have the word Gopal again. This is Gopal deity. So he's meditating on Gopal. Please let me serve this Brahmin boy and tell him what he was in his last life. And as he's meditating, all of a sudden, Navadvip disappears. And he's in the ocean of devastation. And this huge golden fish with a horn on his head and Vasuki wrapped around his horn is pulling this boat of Satyavraja Muni with the sages and the grains and the astrologers in ecstasy. And he comes out of his trance and Nimai's there and he says, so, what was I in my last life? The astrologer says, I don't know yet. Let me ask again. So he prays to Gopal, and he goes into meditation. And again, Navadvip disappears. And he's there in the ocean of milk. There's this huge golden mountain, again, with Vasuki around the mountain. And the demigods are pulling on the tail, and the demons are pulling on the head. And Vishnu's there pulling, and there's Vishnu on the top with thousands of arms. And Lakshmi Devi and Airavata and Rushrava, they're all coming out of the ocean. Underneath the mountain is this beautiful, huge, peaceful turtle having his ornaments polished by the churning of the ocean and his back scratched and his shell brilliant with many colors and his breathing causing the tides to flow in imitation and the Brahmana was in ecstasy and he comes out of his trance and Nimai says, so, who was I in my last life? Oh, I'm not really sure. Let me. And he went like this through all the different incarnations. And at the end, he says, he was having this very ecstatic experience. But at the end, he said, my dear boy, I'm really sorry, but I don't seem to be able to practice my craft very well today. It's somehow my astrology isn't working and my craft isn't working. And I can't figure out who you were in your next life. Maybe I'll come back tomorrow. And then Nimai said, well, actually, I know who I was in my last life. He said, in my last life, I was a cowherd boy. He said, and because I took such nice care of the cows, I got pious credits to take birth in a family of brahmanas. And the commentary there is how important it is to take care of the cows. And taking care of the cows is not some lowly activity. It's not something for low-grade people, but it's something taken care of by the highest people. In fact, it's taken care of by the highest, the highest, the highest, the highest, the highest. The original Gopala is not Prasadra. The original Gopala is Krishna. What does God do? The residents of Vaikuntha, they didn't understand. There was a higher realm. Right? At one point, Narada Muni takes Gopakumar aside and he says, there's a higher realm. I'm not going to say this in front of the residents of Vaikuntha because it would disturb their mood. Even in Dwarka, Narada and Uddhava talk privately to Gopakumar about Vrindavan, about Goloka, the realm of the cows. So who would imagine that God takes care of the cows? God himself, the top king of kings of king of king of kings. He takes care of cows. That's what he does. Not as a livelihood, because Krishna doesn't need a livelihood, but for fun, for lila. And he takes such nice care of the cows that when Mother Yasoda says to him, you should wear shoes on the path, you know, the young gopis were always worried about this. When Krishna was out taking care of the cows, they were always thinking, oh, maybe there's a little stone on the path. So Mother Yasoda was also thinking like this. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gornitai. And she said, my dear boy, why don't you wear shoes and an umbrella? And he says, you have to give all the cows shoes then. There has to be somebody carrying an umbrella for each cow. And you have to put shoes on the cows. You know, we put shoes on horses. We don't usually put shoes on cows. He says, unless you put shoes on the cows, then I'm not going to wear shoes. Of course, Krishna wears shoes in Dwarka. Prabhupada says, not ordinary shoes with jewels and like that. Who thinks like this? What person taking care of animals says, I can't have anything better than the animals? Whatever facility the animals have, I can't have better than that. And that's how Krishna thinks. So what's this thing about cows? What is this? That God takes care of cows, that Vasistha's ordering the son of Manu to guard the cows at night, and he takes a vow. I mean, I'm sure, 100% sure, that the majority of the people of the planet think this is very odd. They have this expression, holy cow, to talk about something you're attached to that's foolish. Oh, that's his holy cow. Can't talk about that with him. Can't deal with that with him. And so many people in the West, they think that the determination on the part of so many people in India not to eat cows and not to kill cows is just something foolish. And if you'd kill the cows, then you could feed all your people. It's just not understood. We've had a problem here at the manor with the government, yes? Understanding why we want to take care of the cows. They don't really get it. They don't understand it. So Prabhupada says here, the most sinful activity in human society is killing the cows. Of course, there's times Prabhupada says other things is the most sinful activity. In the story of Ajamil, he says illicit sex is the most sinful activity. Why is it so serious? So first of all, the cows are giving a great gift to human society, a gift that's not, again, so much appreciated in the modern day. And they're giving a multitude of gifts. So, of course, they give gifts in the form of their milk. And Prabhupada says the most important part of the milk is the... Anybody know? The fat. You know, nowadays when you buy milk at the shop, either they've removed the fat or they do this strange homogenization process where they break up the fat into tiny little globules so it doesn't go to the top anymore. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to get milk delivered to our door in glass bottles. And the milk would always be at the top. And you use the milk, you wash the bottle, you put it back out, and they refill the bottle again. We had a milk delivery every day. So this fat, why is the fat so important? Anybody know why the fat in milk is so important? Yes. Brain food. Our brain is, I think, 60-70% fat. And whatever kinds of fats we eat has a direct effect on our brain. Whatever kinds of fats we eat has a direct effect on our brain. The way our brain develops depends on the specific types of fats we eat. Thus, I'm going to risk being very controversial and never being invited back to the manor. We should cook in ghee. Yes, okay. End of that political statement. Because it matters. What kind of fats you use matter. I mean, even in the early days of ISKCON when we were extremely poor, I mean, really, we were really, 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 really poor, my dear friends. Really, really poor. There were 12 of us in a room, and all of my possessions fit in a milk crate. You know, we didn't even have real saris. We just had pieces of cloth from the cloth shop. You know, I mean, we were really poor. Really, 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 really poor. I mean, I didn't think about it like that. We were too busy doing service to think about how poor we were. It wasn't particularly important. It was important to my poor mother. Oh, my God. Hare Krishna. You know, some of you probably know I was from a multimillionaire family, lived on Central Park West, very aristocratic family. It was a little heavy for my mother to come in the temple and see how I was living. She couldn't deal with it at all. You know, I remember when my father came. In those days, we were so poor, my dear friends. We didn't have plates. We didn't have plates. You know those boxes of wax paper that you get like at a donut shop for holding the donut? That's what we ate off of. We sat on the floor and we put a little piece of wax paper on the floor. And if what you had turmeric in it, when you picked up the paper, there was a big yellow block on the floor. You know, you couldn't carry your plate anywhere. As soon as you went to pick it up, it split in half. And that's what we ate on. But we cooked in ghee. Nobody said, oh, take the money that we're spending on ghee, buy cheap oil, and buy plates for the devotees. that didn't occur to us. That was out of our paradigm. Almost completely out of our paradigm. Or beds for the devotees. I often find it humorous that until I traveled as a vanaprastha, I never slept on a bed in the Hare Krishna movement. Right at the time when I was supposed to be sleeping out in the forest, you know, now I'm given beds. So we didn't spend money on beds. We didn't spend money on plates. So we spent money on ghee. So this cow fat, it nourishes the brain. And whatever kind of fats you eat, that determines what kind of brain you have. And the cow fat nourishes the brain in such a way that sattva gun becomes very easy. You know, we get asked the question all the time, all over the world, by everybody, how do I become steady in Krishna consciousness? And everybody asks this question. It's, you know, in the top five. Yes, Mahatma Prabhu? Yes? Maharaj, do you get asked this question a lot? We should compile a list, all of us traveling preachers, you know, and all of us counselors, what are the top 5 or 10 questions you get asked everywhere in the world? And there's some variety of this. How do I become steady? You know, sometimes I'm really happy in Krishna consciousness, and other times I'm just, how do I stay that way all the time? You have to come to Nista, which means 50% sattva gun. So how do you come to sattva gun? Part of it is what we eat. Vacho vega, manasa krodha vega, jiva vega, mudra pasta vega. Part of it is what we eat. So to eat things in the mode of goodness. And especially the brain comes more to the mode of goodness. And you can feel the difference in your mentality depending on what you eat. Then, of course, the ghee is also used for yajna. Without yajna, how are we going to advance? Krishna says in the 3rd chapter of Bhagavad Gita, one of my favorite chapters in Bhagavad Gita, that without yajna, you cannot be happy in this life or in the next. Of course, in the 4th chapter, he gives many varieties of yajna, but yajna requires ghee. And that's not all. We had a wonderful article many, 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 many years ago in Back to Godhead magazine. What would you rather have, unlimited gold or unlimited cow dung? I don't know if some of you remember that article. I'm sure it's on the Veda base now. And it was a wonderful argument as to why you'd be a much richer person with unlimited cow dung than with unlimited gold. You'd be much wealthier, you'd be much healthier, you'd be much happier if you had unlimited cow dung. I mean, with unlimited cow dung, we could make the Sahara arable. We could make the outback arable. Just imagine. You know, there's evidence that the outback, the Sahara, used to be forest. Do you know that? That were destroyed. We could make so much land on the planet fertile. And of course, cow dung is used not only for fertilizer, but it's used as medicine. It's used as a cleaner. In India and in many parts of the world, it's used for fuel. And then there's the labor of the males, of the bulls and the oxen. You know, nowadays people farm by going into debt and buying expensive machinery, which pollutes the soil, pollutes their lungs, pollutes the air, makes so many people work in a hellish condition. So the cow is also valuable in that the male member is there as a worker in the fields, for transportation. And then, of course, when the cow dies, so many parts of the cow are also used. The cow's skin is then used to make shoes and drums and clothing. So everything the cow gives is valuable. And if somebody gives you something valuable, you need to have gratitude. It's one of the 14 items of knowledge, is to be grateful. We were speaking the other day, Krishna's discussion with the gopis about the 9 kinds of persons. And the 3 kinds of, 4. 2 and 1, it has 3 subcategories of ungrateful persons. Do any of you remember? What were the 2 main categories of ungrateful persons? Anybody remember? See how good of a teacher I am. This is not a test of you, it's a test of me. Anybody remember the 2 main categories of ungrateful persons? Guru Druha, which has 3 subcategories. Anybody remember the 3 subcategories of Guru Druha? Yes. Huh? They hate their benefactors. So one hates their benefactors with reason. One hates their benefactors without reason. And one not only hates the benefactors, but harms the benefactors. So those are the three categories of Guru Druha. And then there was another kind of ungrateful person. Indifference. Good. The Kritigya. They're just stupid. They're just foolish. They don't even notice that anybody's benefacting them. So we have this a lot in modern society with the cows. Most people are what with the cows? What would you say? Are they Guru Druha or are they a Kritigya? They're mostly they're a Kritigya. They just don't even notice. They just don't even pay any attention. They're so, remember the Akritigya was so self-absorbed that they didn't even notice who's helping them? So most people are in this category. They're so self-absorbed, they're so narcissistic, that they're not even aware, oh, this cow's giving me her milk. I'm getting milk from the cow, I'm getting leather from the cow, I'm getting fertilizer from the cow. They don't even notice. They don't even notice the cows are being killed. They just sit down and eat their hamburger and their steak without any thought. It's not that they're thinking about it and they're malicious. They just, like we the Italians say, stupido. It's all about me. It's just all about me. It's just they're like, you know, little tiny infants. Like a little infant is only thinking about themselves. 2-month-old, 3-month-old baby. They're not thinking, how does my mother feel? They're not thinking, maybe my mother needs to sleep at night. You know, they're incapable, only this. So most people are in this category of ungrateful. They're just in a fog of self-absorption. And then we have the actual Guru Druha. You know, the people who are out there slaughtering the cows, who are making money, making their living from raising the cows for slaughter and actually killing the cows. Or we have, you know, the extreme Guru Druha is like Hiranyakashipu, who was saying, you know, take all the sources of yagya from the earth, kill the cows. So here we're seeing gratitude. And this principle of gratitude, of course, applies not only to cows, but it applies in general. I mean, we can go on and on and on in our preaching. Hey, guys, wake up. You're killing cows. They're helping you. Be grateful. But, you know, how grateful are we in our lives? How much do we see? We should also ask this question. How much are we aware of what other people are doing for us, or what animals are doing for us, or what anybody is doing for us? Or do we just kind of go on in our lives thinking about ourselves and not even noticing that so many living entities and God Himself ultimately is doing so much for us? And being absorbed in, you know, how much am I getting, instead of showing some gratitude? I mean, this is pretty extreme gratitude, to be the prince and stay up all night guarding the cows with a sword. And it was very risky, as we'll see. It wasn't without personal risk. So this is one of the items of knowledge, is gratitude. One can't have love of God without gratitude. One can't have love of anything without gratitude. Otherwise, it's not love. It's self-centered. It's all about, what are you doing for me? What are you doing for me? This is what I see kills relationships, whether husband and wife, parents and children, brahmachari friends, guru to disciple. Right? One of the other big things people talk to me about is this relationship or that, you know, with my husband, with my wife, with my kid, with my parents, with my in-laws, with my guru, with my temple president, with the other people in the ashram. How do I deal with these relationships? And inevitably, and you can't usually say this to people's face when you're talking one-on-one, but inevitably the problem is 95% of the time that people are self-absorbed. Yes? And people are self-absorbed. They're sitting and thinking, what is anybody doing for me? What are they doing for me? What are they doing for me? How are they treating 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 me? And if you say, what are you doing? Then they'll give you a whole, oh, I do this much and this and this and this and this and this. But it's not a mood of service. So the real devotee, right, Amanidena, doesn't think, how is anybody honoring me? But they think, how can I honor others? And they really see the gifts and the sacrifice of others. Even the animals. Even the animals. What to speak of the human beings? They see the gifts of the animals. Sometimes, of course, in our Hare Krishna movement, we love the cows more than the people, which is interesting. You know, I've seen that too. you know, somebody's petting the cow and then hits his wife, you know. So that goes on also, this kind of thing, you know. But this gratitude. Without gratitude, we're not persons of knowledge, you know. Oh, I know so much, I can recite so many slokas, and my pronunciation of the Sanskrit is perfect. But we don't have any gratitude. So that's the first thing. I'm sure there's more, but I thought of particularly two here. And the other reason is strength is used to protect the weak. So we have this such nice verse from the Bhagavad Gita, 7:11, which... when we have our seminar in Lord Balaram, we refer to this. So, kama raga vijarjitam balavatam chaham balam balavatam chaham kama raga vijarjitam. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. And Prabhupada says in the purport, the strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. So this is what the kshatriyas do. This is also the model that's being shown here. The cow is, relatively speaking, a weak creature. It's a domesticated creature. Of course, the cow has its horns. Yes? Especially the bull is kind of dangerous with his horns. Chanika Pandit says, don't trust politicians, women, animals with claws, animals with horns, or rivers. What do all those have in common? Political leaders, women, animals with horns, animals with claws, and rivers. They're unpredictable. Yes, they're all unpredictable. And they're also all very powerful. Politicians, women, rivers, animals with horns, animals with claws are all powerful and unpredictable. Right. Now, women in their youthful time have these body chemicals that go like this. Yes? It's nice to be past that. But anyway, they have these body chemicals that go like this. And it makes women somewhat unpredictable even to themselves. So cows are also unpredictable. You just don't know. You know, it's this horned animal. They're an animal. They're not fully rational. So you have this unpredictable animal with horns. So they have some means of defense. They have some means of defense, but they're not a fierce creature. They're not like a shark or a tiger or something like that. They're not a predator animal. And they're very docile by nature. They're very mellow. I mean, even the bulls you see in Vrindavan, you know, there's all these bulls on the side of the road. And I mean, you give them a reasonably wide berth, but they're very docile generally. Only once or twice have I seen a disturbed bull. They're just kind of there. So someone who's giving so much and is very docile, is not aggressive, needs to be protected by the strong. The strong needs to protect the weak. Even this example of Manu's son. So here we can all ask ourselves, what are my strengths? Prabhupada said that everyone has some extraordinary talent. Everyone has some extraordinary talent. And to serve Krishna with one's extraordinary talent means successful life. So all of us have a strength, my dear friends. All of us. We all have some amazing talent, some strength, some power. Every one of us has power in some area, some kind of shakti. And we have this shakti due to our previous karma and our desires and by the grace of God, ultimately. What are we doing with it? So materialistic people use their power to hurt others. They use their power to overlord others. They use their power to shame and embarrass others. They use their power to somehow say, I'm better than you. That is the essence of envy. And higher grade people use their power to help others. So, you know, if you're really in the mode of ignorance, you use your power only for harm. In the mode of passion, you use your power for good externally, but your internal motive is your own self-aggrandizement. And in the mode of goodness, you actually use your power to help others. And this, my dear friends, can be extremely subtle. Because one in the mode of passion and one in the mode of goodness are both externally using their power to help others. The epitome of the one in the mode of passion is the Raja, the king. And the king, righteous king, is using his power to help others. But if our purpose is self-aggrandizement, if our purpose is ego, then even though we appear to be helping others, really the only person we're trying to help is ourselves. And therefore, someone in the mode of passion is a great risk of doing things in the mode of ignorance. They're a great risk of harming others. And I find it fascinating that Narada Muni says to Dhruva Maharaj, if you help those, if you help bring up those who are lower than you, make friendship with those who are equal, and serve those who are higher, then you'll be free of all material miseries. Is that fascinating? Would we like to be free of all material miseries? When we suffer, do we say, why me? Well, that's why me. The reason is that we use our power to harm other living entities. Ultimately, of course, we can only harm ourselves. Prabhupada says, you fool, you cannot harm anybody else. You're only harming yourself. Why? Because I can't really harm anybody that's not their karma. I don't have the power to overstep the destiny allotted by God and Yamaraj. So when I apparently use my strength to harm others, or for my own self, the real person that I'm hurting is myself. I drag myself away from Krishna. So what am I doing with my talents? And to be very careful to really look deeply, because it's easy to say superficially, I'm using the talents and strength and power that Krishna has given me in his service. But if we really meditate on how do other people see me? How do other people experience me? What effect am I having on other living entities around me? Am I really acting for their benefit? I mean, Prasadra was so surrendered to using his strength for good that he's guarding cows at night. That's how giving that he was. So what do I do with my talents? Do I ever delight in the fact that I'm better than others? Do I ever delight in use of my power and my shakti for harm of others instead of for good of others? Now, ultimately, though, we're not trying to become grateful. We're not trying to use our talents nicely. We're not even trying to eat milk and ghee just so that we can be good people and that we can be happy in the world and that we can be full of knowledge. We're really trying to do these things ultimately so that Krishna will smile at us. We're not trying to do any of these things separately from Krishna. We're not trying to just be grateful people and come to Satvagun so we can be grateful people and take birth as devas or maybe as philosophers. We're not trying to be grateful just so we can be at peace with ourselves. We're not trying to use our talents so we can find peace with ourselves and just have a nice society. Or in Rajagun so we can think we're wonderful people. Nor are we trying to do these things separate from bhakti. But we're doing these things so Krishna will be happy with us. Our only interest is to become attached to Krishna. That's our only interest, is to develop loving attachment to Krishna and to have Krishna smile and Krishna say, well done, my good and faithful servant. So we really want to take care of the cows and we really want to be grateful and we really want to use our talents nicely, because that's what will make Krishna happy. That's our ultimate reason. And of course, when you make Krishna happy, because he's the absolute truth, you also become healthy, you also get a good brain, you also develop a good personality, you also develop all good qualities, you also have a peaceful society. We would be, logically, if you do what's absolutely true, then everything else will also be nice. But you're not doing it so everything will be nice. You're doing it because you want to fall in love with the absolute truth. So we should be asking, okay, Krishna's looking at me. What am I eating? How am I acting? How am I behaving? Am I willing to take this vrata, this virasana vrata, to use my vira, to use my energy, my shakti, my abilities, in a way that demonstrates gratitude and care in a way that gives honor to others, in a way that's not self-absorbed. And then Krishna will be so pleased. And he'll say, thank you, my dear Jiva, for using these gifts that I've given you in such a way as to bring benefit to everyone. Thank you so much. I am very pleased with you. And you can live in my abode where everybody only thinks like that. The spiritual world isn't just some sort of, you know, uber heaven. It's a place where everyone's in that mentality. Everyone's in the mentality of gratitude. Everyone's in the mentality of serving others. No one is self-absorbed. No one is ungrateful. No one misuses their strength. So that is our purpose. And here we're seeing that even Manu's son, for whom he performed so many austerities, worship the Lord, let me have a first-class son, is given on the order of a sister to guarding the cows at night. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements.